This is Bottom Line.
I'm Doug Wells, and today we are speaking with Jill Layfield, the dynamic CEO of Backcountry.com. Headquartered in Utah, Backcountry and its sister sites see over 70 million unique visitors each year. They ship 3 million plus orders, and they employ approximately 1,000 people. Jill, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
Thank you.
So, Jill, Utah is a very active outdoor state. I suspect most of our listeners are intimately familiar with Backcountry.com. But for the few that may not be, I'd like you to start by telling us a little bit about what Backcountry.com does.
Great. It's definitely one of my favorite subjects to discuss. Backcountry is an online specialty retailer of premium outdoor gear. And as you said, we actually operate a family of specialty retail sites. So we not only have backcountry.com, but we have 8 other websites. And the way we think about these different sites is they serve different parts of the overall outdoor industry. So Backcountry is very much kind of committed to skiing and hiking and climbing and paddle. And then we have another site called dogfunk.com, which is targeted at the action sports consumer, so more snowboard, surf, and skate. We have a site called Competitive Cyclists, which addresses high-end road biking and mountain biking. We have a site called motorsport.com, which addresses the power sports industry. We have a site in Europe called Bergfreunde, which is very similar to Backcountry and kind of core outdoor. And then we have a collection of flash sites, which are sites that kind of curate the best deals in outdoor gear and are kind of limited, sell product in a limited fashion.
Probably the best known name there is Steep and Cheap.
Exactly. Yeah, everybody knows Steep and Cheap.
We all look forward to getting the update on what the daily deal is from Steep and Cheap.
That's right. So Steep and Cheap, Whiskey Militia. So Steep and Cheap is an outdoor flash site. WhiskeyMilitia.com is a action sports flash site. And then Chain Love is a cycling flash site.
And I'm a subscriber to all 3 of those.
So,
you know, that's an amazing story. And Backcountry.com has not always been the powerhouse that it is today. It started, like many entrepreneurial companies, really with its 2 founders, $2,000 and a little extra space in the garage. Tell us about its early years. How did Backcountry get its start and get its first big breaks?
Well, you're absolutely right that it's a remarkable story. Two kind of lifelong friends, childhood friends, really. Jim Holland and John Brzee started the company in 1996. And Jim was an Olympic ski jumper and obviously very passionate about the outdoors. And John was a self-proclaimed ski bum who was also passionate about the outdoors, but also increasingly excited about what was happening on the internet. And they combined really their passion, their mutual passion for the outdoors and premium outdoor gear with this kind of evolution of selling things online. And to your point, they pooled together $2,000. They never took any outside funding.
Wow.
And they started a website called, it was actually called backcountrystore.com.
So do you think their primary motivation was to sell gear, or do you think their primary motivation was to get gear at cost for themselves?
Wow, you saw right through that one. I think there was definitely.
We all look for our what I call the bro deal.
That's right. I think it was a combination of a sweet deal on gear and also just very much they both have a strong entrepreneurial spirit. They're very competitive and they saw an opportunity in the market to build a business and compete and win for a customer.
And you joined them about 10 years ago. You haven't always been their CEO. You didn't hire in as their CEO.
No.
Tell us a little bit about, let me back up if I can before you came to Backcountry, because I think it's a interesting story. You were working your way through college. You went to Santa Clara University.
Yes.
And through that first job is how you ended up with your job out of college. Mm-hmm. What were you doing to pay your way through school?
I was leaning on my parents heavily, who were just unbelievably supportive of education. But they have 5 children, so we relied very much on student loans and, you know, just did whatever we had to do to get me through college. But I also held multiple jobs during school to pay for, you know, my lodging and for my books. But it was, you know, it was an investment in the future. For sure,
right.
From my perspective and my parents' perspective. The kind of nice thing is that my last year of college led to my first job, because while waiting tables. I was also going to school. And then at the same time, I had an internship at a great company in Silicon Valley that eventually hired me on.
Your next job, there was a New York Times piece where you shared that my friend Jim Clark, who for the folks don't know, is one of the co-founders of Netscape. Al Gore is sometimes given credit to be the inventor of the internet. Jim Clark and Marc Andreessen are really the two guys that brought the internet to most of the world. So that's quite a kudo that you were able to call Jim one of your good friends. He introduced you to one of your next jobs, which was at Shutterfly. Is that right?
I actually, yes. Well, I had a job between 8x8 and Shutterfly. I worked while at 8x8. I worked for somebody who went to another company called Infogear, and he took me with him to Infogear. After he'd been there 6 months, he said, "You should come work at this startup." And it's funny, there's actually a connection to Steve Jobs and Apple, that the Infogear manufactured a thin client internet appliance called an iPhone.
Wow.
Cisco acquired the technology and the company. I ended up going to work for Cisco Systems. And then, you know, obviously that the iPhone kind of trademark kind of debate happened between Cisco and Apple. But I was at Cisco for a short time when Jim approached me and said, "Hey, I've got this great company. We're doing some really interesting things, and I think you'd be great there. And I'd, you know, be happy to make an introduction to the CEO. And, you know, hopefully you can get a job there, because I think it'd be a great move for you career-wise." And, you know, of course, Jim Clark says this to you, and you're like, "Great, you know, sign me up." And, yeah, it all worked out, and Shutterfly, you know, ended up being kind of my next step in my career.
Well, and that's part of the path to building a successful career, right? I mean, you start where you start. You're a waitress. A door opened. You took advantage of it. You did a really good job there. You made some other friends. They saw the good job that you were doing. And you make the most of each opportunity, and bigger opportunities come along. This is The Bottom Line. I'm speaking with Jill Layfield, CEO of Backcountry.com. And you are kind of living the dream of a Silicon Valley high-tech startup entrepreneur. You had a couple successes under your belt. But you mentioned you gave the keynote address at the Outdoor Retailer show. And I was caught by one of your quotes. You said, "In 2004, I was desperately looking for a new job." You were living the dream of a lot of folks. What was missing in that life?
I think, you know, Shutterfly was this amazing company doing something that I very much felt connected to, because I thought, how amazing to be building a product that allows people to share kind of their life's memories with their friends and family. And I really identified that with that. And I loved the people at Shutterfly. I loved everything about that job. But we went through a lot of hard times. You know, I worked at Shutterfly during the dot-com bubble, and there was just a lot of intense competition. And it was day-to-day, you know, kind of combat style competition, and just an intensity, a work intensity that I think, honestly, I got a little kind of burnt out. And I also kind of at the same time got married, and I just felt like I wanted to take a break from the just nonstop pressure and intensity and hard work that had been my life, from kind of, you know, going to college and then from job to job and then kind of Shutterfly, the intensity of the pace. And so it just felt like a time where I wanted to do something different and take a break. And it was a new beginning for me, having gotten married. And it was funny, because as soon as I made that decision and then, you know, eventually ended up at Backcountry, I was like, "What am I doing?" You know, I had an amazing job at Shutterfly. To have even contemplated leaving it was kind of crazy.
So when you joined Backcountry, I mentioned earlier, you didn't hire in as the CEO. Yep. You hired in as their marketing manager in 2004, about 10 years ago now.
Yep.
Talk to us about what you were doing early. What does a marketing manager at Backcountry, what were you doing?
Yep.
And then what did that path look like to becoming CEO?
So the responsibility of the online marketing manager at Shutterfly, I mean at Backcountry in 2004, was really all about driving traffic to the websites. So acquiring customers online through different marketing channels and bringing those customers to the website, and also converting those converting that traffic into purchasing customers. So largely, I was, you know, kind of right off the bat responsible on the marketing team for, you know, driving the bulk of the revenue for the company, because that was how we acquired customers, was through online marketing channels and bringing that traffic to the site and then converting that traffic.
And even though that was only 10 years ago, the world was very different. You didn't have Pinterest, you didn't have Facebook, you didn't have Twitter. So what were the main tools that you would use to drive business to the website?
So it was early days of paid search marketing, so marketing through Google keywords, and had to get kind of very good at that very fast. But that was a big channel for us then and still is, as well as affiliate marketing, which is just partnering with other websites to bring traffic from those websites to our sites. Email marketing, those were kind of the big channels, which, you know.
It worked.
Yes. I mean, I learned a lot. You know, a lot of what I learned at Shutterfly, I brought to backcountry. There was also a lot that I hadn't done before that I had to figure out very quickly that was different.
You know, there's the old adage in advertising that, you know, only half your marketing works.
That's right.
But the challenge is you don't know which half of your marketing works. The nice thing about marketing on the internet, I would think, is you can track it. You know which half works and which half doesn't work.
That's right. And thinking back to 2004, we really, called it pay for performance marketing or direct response marketing. And to your point, that's all about knowing exactly what the return is on every dollar that you spend in terms of marketing marketing to your customers. And this was something I think that John and Jim, the founders of Backcountry, understood early on was critical to Backcountry's success. And that was every dollar that we spent had to return kind of to the levels that we needed to in order to profitably grow the company. So it was a great challenge, but it was something that, that I learned, had to learn quickly, and then has kind of served us well as we've grown Backcountry.
And so after marketing manager, then you moved up to chief operating officer.
I actually had a stint in between. I was marketing manager, and then I got promoted to director of marketing. And then I actually was in the vice president of product management role before becoming chief operating officer. I had gone to Jim and John and said, we're driving a massive amount of traffic to our website. We need to now hone the methodology by which we optimize the user experience to convert that traffic at a higher rate. And that's a discipline called product management and, user experience design in the world of consumer internet. I said, we don't have that skill set in the building. We need to go find somebody great to do this. So we started a search. We talked to lots of people. We couldn't find anybody that kind of fit the culture and had the expertise. And
so it ended up being you.
Exactly. After a while, they're like, well, why don't you do it? And I said, okay, great. And so I bought a book and I read the book. And actually,
And soon you were an expert.
Yeah, well, right? Sort of. I had a great mentor, another amazing mentor, a guy named Marty Kagan who runs Silicon Valley Product Group, really taught me the ropes of product management. And I just, learned.
You winged it until you figured it out.
And it was awesome. It was an amazing experience, kind of getting into the head of your consumer and figuring out how to make the experience better so that they're more likely to engage with your website and ultimately buy.
I want to get back to your transition.
Yep.
So then you become CEO, but there's two founders at the firm.
Yes.
And so you're taking over for one of the founders that was acting as Jim, I believe, right?
Yes.
Was acting as CEO. That can be a really tough transition for anybody to be the new CEO after one of the founders steps aside.
Yep.
What was that like? What were some of the challenges with doing that?
You know, I didn't find it challenging at all, and I think that is because Jim and John, they chose me and they said, we want to turn basically our baby over to you and let you run this company, which was like shocking in and of itself. After I got over the shock and got excited about the opportunity, and we decided.
Did they have
this
to talk you
happen.
Into that, or was that something you were eager to embrace?
I mean, they didn't have to talk. I mean, no way. Was I shocked? Absolutely. I never, ever thought I would be CEO of Backcountry. That never entered my mind. And so I was. They didn't have to talk me into it because that's a once-in-a-life opportunity.
Right,
you're going to go, hell yeah, sign me up. But from there, you know, they really focused on making me successful, and they had made their mind up. This was what they wanted to do with their life. Jim wanted to go live the dream and kite ski and, you know, mountain bike and just do kind of, you know, every outdoor activity that he loves to do. And he really made sure that I was successful. He stayed on as executive chairman, so he's continued to be involved and be a mentor and ensure that really I was successful.
Which can
position.
Be a pro or a con. It
right,
sounds like in your
right.
case, it's been a positive experience.
Totally. And I mean, I'll be very candid here. There, you know, I was a little concerned. I thought, well, gosh, is he really ready to step down? And
right.
how is this going to work? And, you know, but Jim has been amazing. I mean, it's kind of shocking to me how balanced he's been in kind of leaning in and giving me support, but also letting me, you know, make the decisions that I need to make and run the company the way I see fit.
Yeah. So speaking of being yourself and being authentic, you talk very openly about some of the challenges, work-life balance.
Yep.
You're the mother of two daughters,
yep.
I think 6 and 2 now, if I
yep.
did my math right.
That's
from
right.
the last interview I saw. Your first daughter was born in 2007.
Yes.
When you were climbing up the ladder at Backcountry.
Yes.
How did you originally deal with the struggle for balance, and then how has that evolved over time?
So with Madeline, my, let's see, 6-year-old, almost 7-year-old was born, it feels like it was like 50 years ago. It's hard to remember.
It's funny how kids do that too.
I'm like, you know, I manage pretty well. My husband has always had a flexible kind of job, or he's now taking time off. So I've had a lot of support from him, which has been pretty amazing and helpful. But I just... with her, it didn't feel the kind of ripples of distraction or being overwhelmed. I think I felt more of that with my second one, you know, double the work and just double the pressure in terms of job and number of children. So with Madeline, I felt like I got through it just fine. And I just did it. And, you know, everything else in my life was pretty easy because I had a lot of support from my husband and, you know, work and kind of where Backcountry was at that phase, we were just growing like crazy. And there wasn't a lot of competition online for selling outdoor gear. And we were just,
in hindsight, everything is rosy.
Yeah, I look back and then I'm like, reflecting it felt a lot easier that time around. I think you have to kind of make choices day by day about what your focus was going to be or what you're going to do that day in that moment. And, you know, I believe that women are great multitaskers, and I, you know, I definitely am balancing a lot. But when it comes to work versus kind of my children, I'm not perfect at it, but I try to focus completely when I'm at work on work. And when I go home at night, there's those few hours before bed where it's just my children. Now, if I sneak off to go to the restroom, I may be checking my phone. But, you know, I'm really trying to be kind of present there for them and not cheat them out of their time with me. And when I'm at work, I'm also trying not to, you know, be addressing things that I have at home.
I heard somebody use a phrase the other day. It was actually on public radio. I think it was KCPW. Contaminated time.
Right.
Where you're trying to have... you know, quality time with, particularly with your kids.
Yes.
And the iPhone, the smartphone can be a really powerful tool to help you sneak in a little extra work.
Yep.
But it can also be a huge distraction.
Yep.
if you're not careful.
Oh, my husband's constantly on me about it. If I'm at home and he sees the phone out when I'm supposed to be hanging out with my children,
right.
he's like, Jill.
I was going to ask you
down.
For some secrets, but it seems like you struggle with it just like I do as well.
The iPhone now.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, our guest is Jill Layfield, CEO of Backcountry.com. So you have two daughters. I have two daughters. My daughters are a little bit older than yours. Mine are 13 and 11. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that as I get further in my career and I'm doing work that I really love, that I spent many years working hard to get in the position where I can do the work that I love doing. And so now I spend a lot of time thinking about my daughters and, you know, how do I help them get to the same place in their life? And one of the things that's really been frustrating to me as I become more sensitive to the issues of women in the workplace, mm-hmm. I am shocked that here we are in 2014 and there are so few women that are leading companies, that are mm-hmm. CEOs of companies. There are so few women. You see it in the Bay Area. that are on the boards of companies. And I think back to the era of my parents and the progress that was made in my mother's lifetime, which was huge. I mean, the type of opportunities that my sister had when she entered the workforce was very different than the type of opportunities my mother had. Why do you think there's been so little progress in the last 20 years to open more doors for women?
I think potentially one of the issues is there's been this, you know, massive evolution around technology, and that kind of hyper growth around technology is almost, been at the kind of detriment of progress in terms of women in leadership roles, because women are naturally or not naturally, but statistically less likely to, enter technology roles or engineering roles. There's just fewer women in technology and engineering, getting engineering degrees. I mean, it's increasing, but it's still, when you break it down, it's a very heavily male-dominated field and skill set. And so you have these technology companies and lots of innovation happening around technology, and you don't have women that have made that kind of part of their education or their career path. And so then naturally, there aren't women leading those businesses or those companies. And so one of the things that I, applaud and I love is efforts being made to expose children, young women, to kind of more technical roles or engineering roles. My daughter Madeline came home from her elementary school this year, and they had had a day all around coding. And she was like, I'm going to be an engineer. I love to code. I want to build software. And, my husband's an engineer. And I was just like, this is amazing, And I love that. Like, I loved that she had that exposure, because, technology and the evolution around technology is just happening at such a breakneck speed. And it's so, going to continue to be kind of the future, that I think in order to lead a company or women to move into increased leadership roles, they've got to understand technology. And they, if we can make more women kind of have a passion for engineering the way naturally women have a passion for, today, fashion as an example, right, then, they'll be able to lead those companies that are being built.
So being CEO is not all fun and games. You have a lot of energy. I'm sure there's a lot of people listening and saying, wow, I want to be like Jill. But talk to us about some of the tough times. And when I originally thought about this question, I was thinking about like 2008, 2009, the financial crisis. But you work in the outdoor industry. And so 2012 was probably a tough year for you, because it was a very, late winter. We really didn't get a lot of snow. And so I'm sure that affected your sales. What's it like when things go from revenues increasing every year and now all of a sudden things get tougher?
Yes. Backcountry, massive success story. But to your point, we have not been without our challenges. And to your point, 2012 was definitely
Was that a worse year for you than 2008-9?
11, really? The winters of 11, 12, and even 12, 13 were not great winters
so
across the U.S.
People will still keep buying gear even when they're worried they may lose their job.
Right.
But when there's no snow,
right,
there's no sales.
Very,
that's
very
funny.
Difficult when it's right, as warm and dry as it was in the U.S. For two back-to-back winters. And we've also, what I said earlier, we've seen definitely an increase in competition from, say, 2007 to now. There's just a lot more people selling outdoor gear online. So, we've had to constantly, evaluate, how do we compete? How do we win? What's the value that we bring to the market that our competition, doesn't? And so have all of that, warm and dry winters, increased competition, has made 2011 was like this blowout year for me. And it's funny because I think back at that and I became CEO and, was pregnant with my second child in 2011. And it was just, it was like kind of everything was easy, really. Mm-hmm. And then things were more difficult for sure in 2012. And lots of people said to me, being a CEO is a very, very difficult job. And you will get, blamed for things that you didn't directly do. You will get congratulated for things that you didn't directly impact. You are ultimately accountable. And I didn't really know what that meant until I had to work through a few challenging, quarters. And I...
Well, let's talk about that, right? Because I think a lot of people confuse management with leadership.
Right.
Right. And when the numbers aren't coming and you're getting phone calls from your bosses...
Yes.
Saying, hey, what are we going to do to hit this number? You signed up for this number, and
that's
it's
right.
We're halfway through the quarter, and we're not halfway to that number yet.
Yeah.
That puts a lot of pressure on you, and I think the default for a lot of folks is to get more controlling. Mm. And it's logical.
Mm.
The problem is it doesn't work.
Right.
So what did you do? How did you motivate your team? How did you handle that?
So I definitely made mistakes, like you said. So just to be very, kind of honest here, your first reaction is just to put more rigor around things and tell people more kind of in detail what needs to get done. And that, that's not what your team wants to hear. They want to hear, what I found is that you want, as a leader, to be very clear about what the most important things are in the business and how you're going to win and how you're going to measure winning. And then you want to turn that information over to the teams and say, go make it happen. And here's what we'll check back in on. And these are the, key metrics we need to move. But I hired you to figure out how to go move those metrics. That's your job. And, instead of trying to be the person with all the answers and enumerate the various steps that you're going to take in order to hit those numbers, you got to back off. And that's number one.
And I think that's a key there, right?
Yeah.
I think it's very helpful for your team to see you laugh.
Yes.
And to relax occasionally.
Yes.
And we're going to work together as a team to get through this. You may or may not hit that number, right?
Yeah.
If you're halfway through the quarter and coming to grips with that and saying, my team is more important than this one quarter's
number.
That's
right. I think there's a couple other things. Number two is, staying very optimistic. I feel like, pessimism narrows focus, and it's, I would find it necessary for myself as well as my direct team to constantly be reminding everyone that, you have some bad quarters and, it's how you work through them as a team, and this isn't the end of the world. And let's imagine what's possible to make things better. But keeping the mood optimistic is important. And that's why I think the job of the CEO is difficult, is because you're the ultimate representation of that every day. I would be told by people like, you walked by me in the hall and didn't say hello to me that one day. And I was just like, wait, what? Right. I might have looked down at my shoelace, but, and it was just a reminder of like, myself and my executive team, like our spirit and our energy is what is going to keep the
mood. It's all amplified. Everything you do, both pro and con, gets amplified the higher up you go.
That's right. And then I think the last thing for backcountry is, given our roots are in the outdoor industry and we believe very much in balancing kind of performance with our passion for the outdoors, we were very careful to not abandon what is kind of core to our culture. And, it's a day-to-day struggle when business is bad. But, if you don't let people take powder mornings, as an example, they're not going to come in the second half of the day and do their job as well as they would if they get after it in the morning and come in happy and kind of excited to tackle whatever business problems you have.
I think that's a good example. I try to take a couple powder days even. And, when they come up, it's like, oh, today's not a good day. But, we live in this amazing
right.
place. And you only fully appreciate that if you do take advantage every now and
right.
then. Jill, thank you for joining us today. I enjoyed our conversation.
Great. Thank you.
Jill Layfield is the CEO of Backcountry.com. The Bottom Line is recorded at KCPW Studio on Library Square and produced by Ross Chambliss, with technical support from Jesse Ellis and Tyler Ford. I'm Doug Wells. See you next week.